Please stay tuned for a special presentation on the life of Rich DeVos with Father Robert Sirico and Deacon Jim Thorndale.
Greetings and welcome to Holy Family Radio. I'm your host, Deacon Jim Thorndale. We're here for a special tribute to Richard DeVos, co-founder of the Amway Corporation. This particular show is really going to kind of focus on the life and time of Richard DeVos. And we have somebody here who really has a lot of expertise in understanding Richard, who had a friendship with Mr. DeVos and really can speak highly of who he was, his character, and what the man believed in. I have with me here in the studio Father Robert Sirico, and let me just give you a little background on Father. He is the president of the Acton Institute, which is a top-rated think tank dedicated to the study of religion, liberty, and economics. He's also the pastor of Sacred Heart Parish here in Grand Rapids. Father is the author, Defending the Free Market, which has been out for quite a while now, and it's a great book. I've read it. And he's also an international speaker and guest on Fox News occasionally, and occasionally he's a guest here on Holy Family Radio. Yes. Father, welcome.
Great to be back. Thank you, Deacon.
Good to have you really here. You know, we know this. Richard DeVos was a special man along with Jay Van Andel.
Yes, and I had the privilege of knowing both of them.
Yeah.
I just kind of backed into these relationships. I have to say, you know, not being from West Michigan originally, though,
right.
I've been here for 30 years, more than 30 years, I didn't really realize who they were.
Yeah.
I knew about Amway. I had purchased Amway products years and years ago. But one day, as I was beginning the Acton Institute, I was serving at the Catholic Information Center, which then was on Ionia.
Mm-hmm.
And a friend of mine said, well, you know, you should talk to Dick DeVos. This is Rich's son. It gets very confusing in that family.
It does. It's a lot of Riches and Dicks.
Rich, Dick, and Rick.
Yeah, that's right.
So this is the middle one. This is Dick DeVos.
And Dan.
And then Dan. But
yeah.
I mean the Rick, Dick, and
right.
Rich. So I went to see Dick DeVos to explain to him what I was doing. I said, this mutual friend of ours said you might be interested in the Acton Institute. And he sat and listened to me for about 45 minutes with his jaw wide open.
Yeah.
And I said, why is this so surprising to you? Now, remember, this is over 30 years ago. So this is when Catholics and the Dutch Reform were very kind of separate worlds. He said, I've just never heard a Catholic priest talk about economics and the free economy like that. He said, what are you doing about this? I said, well, we're just putting the ideas together. He said, you need to come and meet my family. I had this vague idea of who his family was. He said, what are you doing tonight? And I said, well, I happen to be free. He said, come over to, and then I went over to the DeVos place. That should have cued me in, you know.
Exactly.
And
now, DeVos, was that there 30 years ago?
Well, it was the auditorium.
Okay. Oh, yeah. That was a civic auditorium, or not the civic.
No. This wasn't the civic. It was the one next to it. It was
okay.
It was the new one.
Okay.
I think it was called the DeVos Place,
right.
Or the DeVos Auditorium, maybe.
Okay.
And I went there, and there was some program about evangelical movies in high schools and something like that. Gospel films was the name of the thing. So I sat through the program, and then I was invited over to dinner afterwards. And as I was walking through the connecting corridor from the auditorium to the where we had dinner, Rich was standing there holding the door open. And he said, hey, Padre, how are you? That was his first words to me. And I said, fine, good to meet you. And we chatted. He said, so what are you here for? I said, well, your son invited me to come. He said, well, I'm very glad to have you. And so he walked me in to this dinner with all these evangelicals. As it turned out, the princes were there. I didn't even make the connection between the princes and the DeVosses in those days. And I walk in the room, and all of these Dutch heads turn and look at me in a Roman collar, being led by
what are you doing here?
By Rich DeVos. And so I sat down, and we got to know each other that night, and then much more in the years ahead. They, of course, were very much concerned about the free economy because the whole basis of Amway is promoting entrepreneurship. And I just found a real interesting resonance with all of that. But then over the years, with my relationship with Dick and then Rich and Helen, and of course Dick and Betsy, the kids, Rick was just a little kid at the time.
Course.
I remember them at the dinner, all these little kids, we began to talk about questions of concern that we shared.
Yep.
Began with questions of business and the necessity to limit government's interference in business and lower taxes being the basis for a prosperous economy and all the rest of it. But then we would talk about things like the important role of philanthropy in society. Mm-hmm. And they, of course, are – and this is why I need to say I think it's very appropriate for Holy Family Radio to be taking this moment to think about this man, because he's a great model and a great inspiration for a Christian businessman. And if truth – is to be served, this man and his colleague, the co-founder of Amway,
J. Van Andel,
really provided a model, including for Catholic philanthropists,
of course,
to emerge, so that what we live in West Michigan, and if people have grown up here, they probably don't realize what a unique community this is. But those two men, more than anyone else, I won't say exclusively, but more than anyone else, provided the initial role modeling for how to be civically engaged, mm-hmm. philanthropically engaged, inspired by their faith and integrating their faith into their business and the way they treated people. And then, of course, many of the social issues that would confront them.
Yeah.
One of the biggest supporters of the right to life has been the DeVos family and the Van Andel families.
Yes, exactly.
And so over the years, as I got to know them in various kinds of situations, whether it was at weddings or at funerals or at dinners, private dinners or at public events, I saw the kind of seamlessness of their faith and their business and their philanthropy and just their downright decency.
Yeah. Now, I want to ask the question, just digress a little bit, and I don't want to talk about acting per se, but I do want to ask this question when we continue on with about Richard's life and all that. What was so oppressive in the Catholic Church about money, and why was it such a shock to hear you talking about a free economy and all this other type of stuff?
Well, remember, this was just in about 1990 that I had made these friendships, and we had not yet had an encyclical like the encyclical of St. John Paul II, mm-hmm. Centesimus Annus, on the 100th anniversary of Catholic social teaching, that really opened the Church in many ways to an understanding of the vocation of business.
Okay, good.
So that the stereotype of Catholics is that they were all progressive,
right,
or they would say socialist or something in that direction. And certainly, you know, this is 1990. This is just at the fall of the Berlin Wall.
Mm-hmm.
In the 80s and the 70s, there were a lot of left-wing Catholic movements, liberation theology, and a lot of expressions from the Catholic Bishops' Conference they had a public letter called Economic Justice for All, which was a kind of American version of liberation theology.
Exactly.
And so I'm sure that many of the Reformed Christians in this community didn't know the details and the nuance of the debate within the Catholic Church. They didn't know about Michael Novak. This was before the beginnings of the Acton Institute. This was right at the beginning of the Acton Institute. That their understanding was that Catholics were doctrinally progressive, mm-hmm. that is, left-wing. And I was saying, no, we don't have to be. In fact, we have a whole rich tradition of business, the School of Salamanca, free markets, and now John Paul II, and we have another understanding of that.
Yeah.
And that's kind of why it was surprising to him. And, you know, in those days, you'd have events. You'd rarely, if you had a civic event, for instance, the anniversary of the refurbishing of the Pantland Hotel, or the Gerry Ford Museum, which the Van Andels were very big in, mm-hmm. in helping to promote. They, for several years, I was the go-to invocator at all these, whereas before it was always the Christian Reformed pastors. And they said, now we've got a Catholic priest who we're not afraid of. And it broke down some of
the barriers.
The barriers. I remember one night at one of the, maybe the first or the second annual Acton Institute dinner, there was a gentleman at the dinner who was kind of the dean of Catholic philanthropy in Grand Rapids at the time. I won't mention the name. But he came up and he said to my colleague, Chris Maurin, he said, how have you done this? And Chris said, what? He said, I'm looking around this room and you have Catholic supporters and Christian Reform supporters. He said, I've been in this community all my life. These people were rarely in the same room at the same time. How did you break that down? And what Chris said was, I guess we didn't know enough.
That's right.
That we just invited everybody and everybody came. And so it was this ecumenical experience that began to emerge.
Beautiful.
And then personally, you know, the relationships became warmer. It's worth noting that Betsy DeVos's, this would be Dick DeVos's brother-in-law,
right,
her brother, Eric Prince, converted to Catholicism.
Yes.
And I was involved in that conversion and baptized the kids and things like that. And at first, you know, that's a big thing. And yet, they managed it, and he was received into that, you know, she was received into the family, and
right,
it really spoke a lot for their appreciation of the common Christian baptism and the fact that we're united in Christ.
Exactly.
By that.
You know, when I think of Rich DeVos, too, I think of the great philanthropist that he was in all the DeVos's. But I also think of a man, he and Jay Van Andel were men of vision.
Yes.
Really didn't have a real clear, after I read his book, Simply Rich, I realized that he didn't have a clear vision, but
no,
he was on a mission and really felt it was from God that
yes,
he was called to do this. But I've said before, he really helped us become a city of cities among cities,
yes,
in Grand Rapids.
We have some of the highest per capita philanthropic giving in the country right here in Grand Rapids, and a lot of that was what they modeled. And, you know, let me just say something, too, about their philanthropy, because if you haven't been the beneficiary of their philanthropy, a lot of people, especially critics of the Acton Institute or critics of the DeVos's and Van Andel's, have very often said, well, they buy their organizations and stuff. Let me tell you something. For 30 years, they've been supporters of the Acton Institute. They never bought the Acton Institute.
Yeah.
What I mean by that is they would give in a leveraged way. They would say, what do you need? Okay, now you go and ask 10 other people to give also. And this is how they built this entire philanthropic culture in Grand Rapids. So I saw this from the inside. They could have endowed the Acton Institute.
Of course.
And not even noticed that they had done it. But they didn't, because they knew that wouldn't be healthy.
And they never made demands on the Acton
Institute. Oh, never. Never, ever. The fact that we articulated our mission, they agreed with the mission, and never once did I get any kind of an indication, well, you really need to do this,
yeah,
or you really need to do that,
yeah,
because we're supporting you. They just didn't have that in their DNA.
Yeah, that speaks highly of the family, too.
Yeah, yeah. And if they don't want to support an organization because they're a different mission, they're a different philosophy, then they don't support the organization.
Of course, of course. So here you're starting this relationship with the DeVos family, particularly with Richard and Helen.
Yeah, Dick and Betsy are the people who I'm closest friends with.
Okay, and as this is starting to develop, you're starting to see the goodness of these people, really,
yeah,
the generosity of these people, not driven by any type of...
And the goodness, not just in their generosity, that, but in the way they treated people who worked for them.
Yeah.
I mean, even if it was somebody serving at a table or security, they had to have security, or the way in which they would treat one another, the way in which they would treat outsiders. So when you say their Christianity, it didn't just come forth in their generosity.
Yeah.
It came forth just in the way they lived their lives.
You know, and many of the players from the Orlando Magic will testify to that when they first bought it, that Rich would go down there and fly to the game and go in the locker room and pray with those men. He didn't know what faith they were. He didn't ask them their denomination.
Right.
He just wanted to pray with them as a Christian man.
No.
And that's powerful.
He was comfortable in his...
Yeah.
In his faith. It was integrated.
I have one little anecdotal story. A friend of mine worked for Amway. He was security at Amway. And one of his jobs was to go to the DeVos house every night and check around on it, make sure everything's fine. He said one day he went to the home and he had to open the door and go in, make sure everything was fine inside. And he said, I opened the kitchen. There's a Rich sitting in there at about 3 a.m. And it shocked him. He was so nervous, didn't know what to say. And Rich said, come on in. I'll make you some coffee. Just sit down and have a cup of coffee with me and just relax.
Sure.
And it was just very friendly and warm, and that's how he treated his employees.
Yeah, no, he was just always that way, as I say. You know, once he wrote a book, and I've forgotten which book it was, because he's written maybe 10 different books.
Right.
And he had written a book, and it had to do with economics and business, and he sent me the manuscript. Now, I happen to know that he had a ghostwriter for that book. And he sent me the book to critique the book. He mm-hmm. said, what needs to be improved? I read the book, and I had a lot of reservations about some of the things that were being said in the book.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote, I think it was a 16-page critical memo. And I remember talking to my colleague. I said, this may do us in. I said, because this is very honest, very blunt. Yeah. And I said that in the cover letter. So I sent it, and I waited, oh, maybe a week, 10 days. And I got a handwritten note back. He said, Padre, he always called me Padre. He said, Padre, Proverbs says that it is better to have the criticism of a friend than the compliment of an enemy.
Mm.
Thank you, my friend. And then when the book came out, it was all changed.
It changed it.
So, but it was, you know, I thought, my real motivation was I didn't want him to put his name on a book that I didn't think reflected what he believed. And, you know, when you're in that position, you get a lot of things thrown at you
exactly.
all at once. He wanted me to pay attention to the substance of the book, and I did.
What kind of lens were you looking through as opposed to the ghostwriter? Obviously, the criticism had to be based on some type of...
Well, I suppose I didn't know the ghostwriter personally. But as I recall the book, this is many years ago now, as I recall the book, it was written with an audience in view, kind of... you know, who Rich was as a businessman mm-hmm. and the writing and the storytelling and everything, but not the philosophy.
Okay, yeah.
So it was inattentive to the philosophy. It wasn't like there was evil stuff in the book. It's just that it was inaccurate and superficial philosophically.
Yeah.
And I knew this man, while he was no academic, he was philosophically profound. I mean, he got, as you said, he didn't have a plan, but he had a mission.
Exactly.
And he just went through doing the next best thing, and that ended up being what he's built.
Exactly.
And so I saw my charge as paying attention to the philosophy. And I suppose that's why he asked me to read it.
Mm-hmm. You know, I know we both said we read the one book he penned called Simply Rich, and it was a good journey about Rich and Jay because they had met in high school.
Yes.
Matter of fact, Jay had charged Rich a quarter to drive in his car every day,
and
it developed a friendship. They both knew they didn't want to work for anybody else.
Right.
That was their entrepreneurial spirit, saying we want to make our own living and be our own bosses.
So they started an airline company, you know.
Well, first of all, they went into the Navy together.
Yes, yes.
And then they came out and they bought a ship. I remember that.
Yes,
they tried to sail to Cuba, and it sank. And they had to get rescued, and they both said, you know what, we've got to find something different. That's when they started that airline as a service, and they just started a metamorphosis from there. And these men really had a vision that they didn't want to work for somebody else. Not that they couldn't, but they had these free spirits that they wanted to be entrepreneurs.
Let me tell you, this is talking out of school, but now they've both passed on. I ghost wrote Jay Van Andel's book, An Enterprising Life.
Mm.
So I had this great butte for about a year, this opportunity. I had to formulate all the questions and talk with Jay, but then also talk with everybody he mentioned in the book.
Oh, my.
So I got to talk to Jerry Ford and Seaman and a whole host of other people, famous people.
Yeah.
And then this was when Rich was waiting to have the heart transplant.
Yeah.
And he was in England, but then in Italy. He went to stay on the Enterprise because they were building the new boat.
Right.
And they said, well, you need to interview Jay, and you need to do it now because we don't know how this surgery, when it's going to happen, if it's going to happen, and what will happen. So I went and sat on the boat with him in just outside of Pisa.
Interviewing Rich.
Rich.
Yeah, you said Jay. You meant Rich.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
It was for Rich's book.
Right.
And so I went and interviewed him, and we talked, and the tapes exist somewhere, we talked about his mortality.
Yeah.
We talked about what if this surgery doesn't go. as he was hoping. And he was very calm and resigned to the will of God. You know, there's a great tradition among the Calvinists of the sovereignty of God.
Yes.
And you accept God's will. And that's what he, I remember him saying to me, you know, I'm going to be content because if it's God's will, it's the best thing for me.
Yeah.
So whatever happens, happens.
Yeah. Great man of faith.
Yeah, no, he was.
Great man of faith. And he really put his life in the hands of God at many times because it came apparent in like I said, the book I read that, they didn't really have a plan, but they always knew that God had a plan for them and they were just following it. So as you're on this journey with, particularly with, Dick and Betsy and then knowing the DeVos family, what's one of the more surprising things that you found about Rich and Helen, if I could ask that question?
The more surprising things.
Kind of put you on the spot there, huh?
Yeah. I mean, well, surprise.
Yeah.
What surprised me?
Or what was more, what was, I should say, what was the more revealing to you in your relationship with them?
Well, I think what I liked in seeing them interact when I was with them as a whole family, because I was with them, well, at different weddings and funerals, but especially when there weren't a lot of people around, I was asked to go. They have a regular retreat as a family to contemplate their responsibilities.
Right.
And they asked me to conduct the service on the Sunday morning for them, which I thought was very interesting.
You know,
they ask a Catholic priest
to be part of that Christian reform.
And so but I remember that watching the generations interact with one another. The kids are always kids.
Yeah.
They're always mischievous. They're always trying to get into something. But to see these people of great here's the surprising thing to me. When you have stereotypes about enormously wealthy people, you think of them as highly, highly sophisticated and beyond the pale, you know, just incommunicable and all that. They were really down home folks.
Yeah. You know, I want to preface that too because it was probably.
I mean, I saw Helen play on the floor with the grandkids and stuff like that. You know, it's just normal life.
Yeah. And you're talking about wealth. I remember it was a Time magazine or a Newsweek magazine listed Rich and Jay many years ago as two of the richest men in the world at that time.
Mm-hmm.
They were like $50 million at that, which is.
I know. Billion.
$50 billion at that time. But here's something about the DeVos family, even the Van Andel family. You can watch these programs on TV, The Rich and the Famous and all that. You will never see them on there.
No. They were not like that at all. I remember speaking to one member of the family, said we go to events, and one time they were going to send a limousine, and they said, absolutely not. We don't want a limousine. Just send a car.
Yeah.
And they had to have security, of course, all the time.
Yeah.
But we don't want to be seen as being ostentatious, even though they had great boats and,
oh my gosh,
and houses and stuff like that.
Yeah, fabulous.
But they weren't doing it for others. You know, you get to that level, you don't have to do it for anybody.
No. They're not trying to impress anybody.
No.
They're well beyond that point.
Yeah.
You know, another thing, too, I really I found out personally for particular reasons, is that, they really live by that mantra, you know, the money is the root of all. Now, it's not the money that's the root of all evil. It's the love of money.
Yeah.
And I don't see them being in love with the money.
You know, we talked about that when they asked me to speak at that, family, gathering in the prayer, you know, I had to preach at it. And I chose, as my passage, the gospel where Jesus said that a rich man will have more difficulty getting into heaven than a camel going through the eye of a needle.
Yeah.
And that was my text for them.
Yeah.
And I said, I don't want to take you off the hook.
Beautiful.
But I want to put you on a bigger hook.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, and they were very receptive to that. And we talked about, other things, responsibility and.
Exactly. I'm thinking about, again, the DeVos family, particularly Richard and help, because we're really talking about the life of Rich DeVos, who has been so instrumental in making this city and a lot of other things. A lot of people, he employs, how many did they employ?
Well, that's what I was going to say. When we talk about this city, we're talking about the lives of families.
Right.
Better here in West Michigan,
right?
But really throughout the world, because that's what business does.
That's right.
It employs people who support families, who send their kids to college, who buy homes, who make dentist appointments and buy their kids braces. When you think of the impact of a corporation like that, and many other businesses, by the way, that they ran, you're talking about all these other people who are impacted by that, who maybe not even know.
Yeah. And they employ really basically all over the world, hundreds of thousands of people. And, they're in China and in Japan and all these other countries, they're so active in these areas that people are and their families are making good living off of Amway. It's been a testimony to Rich and Jay, how they have really, this vision has continued to grow and grow and really becomes so successful in the eyes of so many.
At the 20th anniversary of the Acton Institute, so that's about almost 10 years ago now, maybe 8 or 9 years ago now, we awarded Rich the Faith and Freedom Award. We give that out periodically to particular personalities who are emblematic of the ideals of the Institute, enterprise and virtue and all the rest of it. And he got up at that dinner, and the first thing he said, and I'd heard him say this before, I am a sinner, saved by grace. And that was, if you have that before your eyes, nothing else will obscure the vision of Christ. If you realize that it doesn't matter when you go before the throne of God, somebody once said to me, the shroud has no pockets.
Amen.
When you stand before the throne of God, you can't bring it with you. You have to stand before the throne of God and depend on the grace that he has given to you through his son.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that he was very, very much aware of that.
I agree. Another thing too is, and this is probably tantamount to their success, is Rich and Jay were not afraid to fail.
No, well, that's true with any successful business person, because a business person, especially if they're very successful, what you see is success. There are 100 failures that have gone into that success.
Absolutely.
And you just don't see it.
Absolutely.
I'm sure that was the case. I know that was the case because, I had the opportunity to interview both of them on numerous occasions.
And I think Richard had the mentality too, where he would see people who are struggling. He'd say, there by the grace of God go I.
Right.
Really, it was God's providence that brought him into this. It's people who would deny them their success and would deny that what they've done, it's kind of a skewing the image of who they were.
It's an interesting phenomenon. One of the advantages I have in living in West Michigan now for 30 years, more than 30 years, is that I'm also an outsider. I can always shift and see things from the outside. And the amazing thing to me is anytime there's an article, and I haven't read the letters to the editor on Rich's passing. But anytime there was an article about something that those families did, there's some whiny,
nah, 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 nah,
of course. And I think to myself, how little, how beneath. If you want to make a critique, if you want to have a disagreement with people, and I did over the years, I would have disagreements with them on any variety of things.
Of course.
I'm an opinionated person. That have the disagreement, but this kind of personalizing, this ad hominem attack, simply because they were successful, as though it goes to the core of the error of socialism.
Exactly.
Socialism thinks that anyone who is successful has been successful as the result of exploiting somebody else.
On the backs of others.
And that is a lie.
Exactly.
That is a lie rooted in envy, which is the original sin. That's Satan's original sin. He had envy against God. So I think people have to be held accountable, especially the more successful you are, the more accountable you have to be.
Mm-hmm.
I can just say from the inside, I know these people.
Yeah.
and they held themselves accountable, and they were open to hearing words of admonition on that accountability.
Yeah. Father, the time goes so fast. I want to thank you for being here. You know,
well, thanks for doing this. I think it's very appropriate that a West Michigan radio station should do this. And in particular, I'm proud of the fact that a Catholic station has done this.
Amen.
To attribute to, even though you don't sound like a Catholic when you say that, you know, to pay a proper tribute to this great man and these great men and their great successes.
And he was a brother in the Lord.
Amen.
And so you don't sound like a Catholic when you say that. But again, Father, it's been a privilege to have you here. I know you've had this great relationship with Rich and Helen and Dick and Betsy, and I thank you for sharing those memories with us, because it's important that people in West Michigan hear this to really humanize Richard and to really understand that by the grace of God, he was in the position he was in.
Yes.
So thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Okay. This is Deacon Jim Thorndale, Holy Family Radio. Thank you for listening, and God bless.
Thank you for listening to this tribute to the life of Richard DeVos. If you would like to hear this again, you can find the recording on our website, holyfamilyradio.net, under the programming tab. Thank you for listening.